You're listening to Inside Public Procurement by Bonfire, a show celebrating the unique stories and heroic efforts of those on the front lines of public procurement. Each episode, we bring you the latest trends, tips, and real stories from procurement trailblazers like you, who work tirelessly to bring positive impact to the agencies and communities you serve. Together, let's elevate the field of public procurement to new heights. Now, pull up a chair and let's gather around the bonfire. Our show is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to the Inside Public Procurement Podcast. My name is Tung Law and I am a client support agent over at Bonfire, an e-procurement solution used by over 500 public agencies in North America. I'm very excited because I'm here joined today by Christina Farrell, who is the team lead contracting and procurement services with Workers' Compensation Board Alberta. She has been in supply chain for the past 15 years, specifically in public sector for 12 years, working across various ministries with the provincial government. Christina joined the WCB team in 2014. She holds the esteemed designation of Supply Chain Management Professional, Certified Supply Management Professional, and Certified Associate of Project Management. When not working in supply chain, you can find Christina mentoring up-and-coming leaders across a variety of sectors, as well as spending time with her husband and two cats, deep in a Netflix series. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know what? Let's go ahead. Let's start talk about Netflix, because that's what this show is about here today. No, but I would like to hear a little bit more about yourself. What are you watching these days?
So I last night just finished Clickbait. I couldn't help it. That limited series.
What is that? What's Clickbait?
So it's about a gentleman who is kidnapped and then subsequently dies. And then each episode goes through the characters in the show to tell you a little bit about how they interacted with him so that you can figure out who murdered him. And Whoa. The twist at the end, just like, phew, mind blowing.
What other Netflix series have you been watching over the summer?
Do you know what? I've really been kind of diving deep into the past. I just resurrected Gilmore Girls, because if nothing else, it brings you pure happiness to live in Stars Hollow. Of course, I am a huge Ozark fan. Of course, I also see that they put Manifest on, so I had to finish that up. So I'm definitely a series girl. I like something that I can power watch through for multiple hours at a time until I realize it's 3 a.m. and I probably haven't moved in 5 hours. So,
Christina, I feel like we have a lot in common.
I think
this podcast is going to go very well.
Excellent.
On a professional level, I would love to hear more about your journey into procurement. I think a lot of people, and it's been really exciting, actually, hearing everyone's journey to procurement, because I think it all starts from a place of that nobody knew what procurement was before they got a job into it. I'm curious if that was the case for you.
Actually, very much like everybody else, I went to school to do human resources. That's what I went to school with straight out of university or out of high school. I hail from Newfoundland, so right on the east coast of Canada, and myself and my now husband moved here to Alberta in 2004. I didn't want to drive from the small town that we live in into the city. So I took an assistant job at a local concrete company, which had a small piece of purchasing in it. And it grew and it grew and it grew until we needed an assistant and a full-time purchaser. So I kind of morphed the job for myself. And I thought, you know what, this is what I'm supposed to do. My husband always makes a comment that, good, it's better for you to be at work spending someone else's money than at home spending ours. So I get to spend someone else's money all day long, which feels the shopaholic in me. But it really grew from there. And I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to go to work in the public sector, because I had been in private before that. And I just love the structure of public sector. There is no questions about what can you do and what you can't do. It is really rigorous, and I thrive in that environment. So here I am. Took a couple of chances and learned some things along the way, but could not be happier where I am today.
Amazing. So you are a pro purchaser now. So even when you do have to buy stuff from home, you're like really good at it.
Oh, like if I had to buy a car now, the guy at the dealership pretty much better expect that he's doing 3 bids and a buy.
Christine, I'd like to also talk a little bit more about your role over at Workers' Compensation Board Alberta. Would you be able to expand a little bit about what you do there now?
Absolutely. So we have an incredible team of 7 individuals who oversee all the procurement and contracting for the organization. So we do everything corporately, right from pens and papers to office equipment, all the way through home modifications for injured workers. So we're supporting both internal and external clients. I have the honor of being that group's leader and supporting them as they take care of all of that work. We work with a multitude of the different departments across the organization and really want to be and are striving to be at the forefront of the person they call early on to help make those decisions. That's certainly been a journey for us, but that's what we take care of. Everything from P cards to travel to fleet vehicles. As I said, pens, paper, equipment, buildings, if we needed to buy a building, we take care of all of that. And that includes the tendering portion on the front end, as well as the contract authoring on the back end.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah. I love it. So we before had a little bit of a pre-intro call where we kind of defined some questions to ask you today, and I can't wait to get into these. So let's go ahead and get started. The first one is, you mentioned the term strategic transformation. Now, when you mentioned that, I'm like, what is that? So I would love to hear your definition of what strategic transformation is.
I love this question because it really gets to the soul of what we're trying to do in our department. We're really trying to move from being that tactical doer, from writing the tenders and authoring the contracts, to really being a partner for the business to help them make better and more educated decisions about their spend and planning for projects. So it's going from being pen to paper to really being that, let's help you make a better decision.
So you said from tactical doers to strategic business partners, right?
You bet.
And what does that journey look like when you're going from this end to the other?
So for WCB, we've been on this journey to kind of transform how we handle procurements in the organization. When I joined the organization just over 7 years ago, both my team and I knew that we needed change on how we handled what we bought. But we knew it wouldn't happen overnight. We started to identify small areas for change. We didn't need a big bang approach. As a team, we got into the organization and promoted ourselves. We talked about what we did. We talked about how we could provide end users with value and how we were not just a hurdle in the race to get what they needed. We also had to listen, though, to our end users and look inwards on what we were doing in order to see it from their point of view. Why weren't they engaging us? What were they considering the bottlenecks? We certainly heard loud and clear that more efficient ways to complete projects and evaluations, as well as signing contracts, was key in reducing those bottlenecks to our business users. They didn't want to feel like they were forced to come to us to just do an activity in a process. So in 2016, we actually implemented an e-signing tool that took our standard contract execution process from 21 days to just hours. It used to take us 21 days to sign a contract and all the parties to execute it, and we got it down to mere hours. So we were super proud of that. And our business area started to see that they were able to implement their contract and actually start the projects faster by utilizing just that one simple change. In 2017, we also started to investigate e-procurement tools, and we actually landed with Bonfire, who are serving us still today. And we're currently running all of our procurements through Bonfire and then authoring all of our contracts through DocuSign, which is our e-signing tool. It's been wonderful to have both of those collaborate together on getting what we need out to our clients, whether it's our internal clients for signing or external clients for submitting our bids in. We also knew that we kind of wanted more, that the tools were only part of the whole transformation. We needed to change the way the business units interacted with us, showing us as that strategic partner throughout the whole process, and not just the act of procurement or contracting. So in early 2020, we launched the Procure to Pay supply chain strategy. COVID certainly put a wrench into all of our plans, as I'm sure it did with a whole bunch when we switched to remote work. But honestly, I'm probably one of the only people to say it, that the pandemic has actually done procurement a favor.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it actually puts supply chain management on the map. It's at the forefront of all the conversations in media right now. You're hearing, today there was a supply chain disruption in receiving the vaccine. Tomorrow, supply chain is key in getting PPE to those on the front lines. I feel like it started a great conversation. I actually had one with one of our senior directors who made a comment about the importance of supply chain throughout the pandemic. and how they never knew supply chain even existed before now. You know, proud as a peacock over my staff, I politely let them know, hey, you have 5 strategically trained individuals in your contracting team who hold designations in supply chain. We may be small, but we are mighty. So this journey is going to continue, though, all the way through to 2030. We've just developed a strategy that will help us generate, realize, and sustain value for our organization through innovation, tools, collaboration, and governance. It's about the system, the people, and the process. And it's something I cannot wait to see as our organization transforms.
Now, that's really interesting, Christina. Like, would you say strategic transformation is a process that every organization should start doing? Is it all about kind of looking at how you do the processes now and refining them for the future?
I think in some form or fashion, organizations should be looking at strategic transformation. I think that some organizations certainly are already ahead of the game. They have that embedded into their values, and their vision for the organization is that they always want to be at that best practice, top of the scale for everything. But I think it can be done in really small, manageable chunks. You could look at just your tendering process and say, okay, how could we be better at this? We could potentially move from just 3 bids and a buy or an RFP and really look at maybe something more along the strategic sourcing standpoint. So you're looking for different ways to source. Same essential outcome, but perhaps the vendor outcome might be different. So you can do that even with the smallest of processes, and it not have to be organizationally wide. But it's when you're able to show that value even in the smallest process that it starts to gain traction. And people start to be like, oh, you did this and this was great. Could you maybe do this with our thing? And then it starts to grow and people get momentum and they get excited about it. Because if I'm making your job easier, that means that you are able to make someone else's job easier, because now you have time to do that for them. And it's just a huge circle effect.
Right. And if everyone's job is easier, then that gives you more time to work on other aspects of the job, I assume, right?
Absolutely. It allows us to get out there, talk to more other organizations and see how they're doing it, to stay on top of best practices, to implement some of those like really big stretch goals like AI, and like looking at how we could utilize machine learning to make better outcome decisions that right now are really a distant future want for us, right? But if you have more time into your schedule, you can devote more time to that. You can also devote more time to training, which is actually so important in the organization.
You segued yourself here, Christina, because I really wanted to talk to you about training in the public sector, because as we were talking before, you were very passionate about this topic. When I intro'd you, you had 3 designations. They were, I can't even repeat them. They seem so impressive. I would love to hear your thoughts on best practices and struggles of training, but also why training is so important to you.
So for me, I feel that you can always be learning, whether it's that you're learning from a book, from a coworker, from somebody in the industry, from our vendors. There's always an opportunity to learn, and there's always an opportunity to teach somebody something else. If you had looked at my high school yearbook, it would have said most likely to have every letter after the alphabet after her name, because that was what I had gained to be. Q is posing to be a struggle. But it is something that I believe in. I continually want to educate myself, even if it's in informal and formal manners. One thing that we find, though, in public sector, especially in Canada, is that there is a limited amount of training available for us. Often you are either having to completely develop it yourself in-house, and who has time? or you're having to contract with specific individuals who come in and teach you a specific topic to just your staff. We kind of miss out on those big across your network type of training that you get in some of the larger training programs. Most of what we see in Canada are specific for manufacturing, oil and gas, just because that's a large portion of the sector, right? And it's hard sometimes going to those courses, while still incredibly valuable, it's hard sometimes to like tie it back to the work we do in public sector. Unless you're working in transportation or maybe in environmental or forestry, you're more often than not actually buying services than you are over raw materials or goods that are going to go to an end user. So it's hard to figure out, you know, how inventory is going to work if we never actually have inventory. So For our team, one of the things that we've done is that we've seen the last number of years, there has been a little bit more of a rise in Canadian public sector training. There's a new association that we're really proud to be part of that is bringing more and more education to that particular area. It doesn't mean that the other associations that we hold those designations in that I don't on a regular basis be like, hey, great class offering, but what about procurement? What about public procurement? We are a large group. Every single province across the country has a provincial government. There is a federal government. We each have municipalities and agencies, boards, and commissions that all fall under the public sector realm. And, you know, it's a really lucrative market that the education areas are not necessarily tapping into. So what we do in our team is we certainly try to send somebody to every single offering that they're offering in the Canadian public sector. And we do really a train the trainer. I send a staff, they do it, they learn it, they come back full of energy and all the happiness in the world. And then they teach us. And then somebody else goes and we do that. And then we grow our education beyond that. And then we take that information and we look at how we can take that and turn it into something that our end users can use. You know, our business areas, could they find value in learning how to manage a contract differently? How to build a partnership strategy with a vendor, which is something that we recently took on in 2020 and was so important to us that our vendor started to feel like partnership was not just, I'm going to do work for you and you're going to pay me for it, but hey, I have innovation to show you. And we want to see what that innovation is. And we take that as a really important partnership. So it's, what can we do to train them? And then the other side of it is, the vendor's not successful in an RFP. How can we train them to be better next time? How can we offer them assistance? How can we give them a good, solid debrief, give them tips that they could utilize in the future? And I've heard a couple times on debriefs that my team have done where the vendors have turned around and said, I have never felt like a company wanted to do business with me and wanted to make me better for the next time around than I do with working with WCB. And that's what it is. At the end of the day, the team feels so empowered to help those vendors, help that business area, help each other, that it's a benefit for everybody. So I would love there to be more training.
Yeah. And that sounds like when you're giving that training to vendors, it seems like you're already building that positive relationship with one another and that trust. And trust goes both ways. So when you offer that olive branch of training, they must feel like, wow, WCB is the place that I want to work with, right? So that's awesome.
Yeah, I often think of our relationships with our vendors, and this did come from training that I received, that the relationship you have with a vendor is no different than a relationship you have with an employee. Of course, there's different legal pieces around it, but you would want to tell an employee, hey, you know what, you're not doing a great job on this, but this is how I'd like to see you improve by X date. We should be affording the same to our vendors. I think that that builds strong relationships. Same thing on the flip side. Hey, you know what? You did an incredible job on this today. And I think you should receive recognition for that, even if it's just an email. Our vendors on the same thing. If they've done something above and beyond, we should be like, you know what? Thanks. That's the kind of thing we want to see out of you. And we appreciate you for doing that. So I kind of look at it in that way. And that's where I think maybe my HR background and my procurement background kind of meld together. But yeah, that's how I feel about when it comes to training and what that training means, not just for our people, but for everybody we interact with.
So it sounds like training is very important in general, internally and externally, but there may not be at this moment enough resources that, you know, you can send employees out to at this time. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
So does that mean that, I guess for yourself, you've done a lot of just in-house training and creating your own programs to kind of make up for that?
Yeah, we do a lot of, I wouldn't say we necessarily have in-house developed, like documented programs, but we have a lot of conversations. Our staff members are, you know, are involved with tons of periodicals. They're constantly reading. And it's part of our regular every 2 week meeting where we're like, okay, let's talk about something new. Let's talk about something that's happening out there in supply chain today. The pandemic was a great example. Let's talk about how that's going to affect how we're going to get stuff and how we think we could do better and how we can utilize what the government of Ontario did or the Ministry of Finance did in order to overcome that bottleneck. So I think it's part of our regular conversation. So while it doesn't need to necessarily be formal, we make it a priority.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Actually, before we move on, what designation are you working on now? What else are you adding to your resume? Is there a Netflix one that we can add? Or
I wish. Like, I don't know if there's a designation for Netflix that would give me a cue. But I would think, honestly, probably the next thing I probably would undertake would definitely be probably my MBA. I don't know why.
I think everybody goes through that period when they're like, what should I do? My MBA next?
That's right. It's like, I guess my MBA is next. But you know what? Yeah, probably my MBA. I don't know what else I could probably do. I'd have to look.
The world's your oyster. You just have to find something with a Q in it.
I know. They say that I could, there's like an interior designing designation in Australia that's got a Q in it. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Maybe it's just worth doing it, even though it doesn't sound too related to your job. But for the queue, you might have
to.
Let's move on to a common belief you disagree with. Now, you're also very passionate about this. And the statement is that anybody can just buy anything. Can you expand on that?
So I think this comes specifically from like old school thinking, private sector more than anything. But years ago, the office manager or the secretary, they just bought everything. And you don't need any education in it. You don't need any smarts around it. You just, isn't it just click add to cart? But yeah, for something, sure, it's easy. We can buy on Amazon all day long. But don't dare spend over threshold. Like, don't dare go over $10,000 for a good or $75,000 for a service or $100,000 for construction, because then you're going to get yourselves in some hot water. It's not as simple as that anymore, especially in public sector. We are governed by the Canadian Free Trade Agreement, the New West Partnership Trade Agreement, which really set thresholds in place that say, hey, if you've reached these for good services or construction, it is our mandate that we will go out for a public tender. And that's to keep us open, fair, and transparent. And there's only certain individuals in the organization who are educated or trained enough in that to do that on behalf of the organization. So it's not as easy as click and add to cart. We could not buy a building that way.
No, nope, I certainly could not. Nope. I couldn't do it.
But sure, if you would like to go buy a box of pens, have at the Amazon website. But yeah, I think that it's important that people realize the reason why we go and get this education and why we get these designations is so that we are better prepared to help you make better decisions about what types of things you're procuring, whether it's a good or a service. And by utilizing us, you know that you're reducing your risk. You're staying in compliant. We're being open, fair, and transparent to all of the other vendors in the industry. While we may love company A and they may do exactly what we want, company B may offer the exact same, and it may be faster or cheaper. They may have better resources. And without that open competition, we'd never know that. So it's so important that it's not just click, add to cart.
There's more nuance to it, as you just explained.
Totally, yeah.
And, you know, you just mentioned before that supply chain has been popping up in the news some more, getting more recognition. Are you feeling as though because it's popping up in so much mainstream media now that people are starting to give it the recognition that it deserves, I guess?
Oh, I absolutely. I'm seeing that more and more often that, you know, we're seeing that there's a shortage in hiring people in that area because companies are now recognizing, oh, my office manager can't just buy everything for me. I probably need somebody who's trained in this. I've never had to procure 40,000 masks before. You know, and I think that it's starting to certainly come to the limelight for a lot of people. I couldn't be happier. There's nothing that makes you more proud than when you're a part of a designation or a specific industry that lets them people start to realize the importance of it. I have, of course, felt that way for numerous years, but it certainly takes some other people longer. At WCB, I have been really fortunate as an organization. They have supported us and have believed in us. So I have never had that concern, and they've always believed that procurement, supply chain is important to the organization. We just needed to make it a little bit more strategic, which they are super about supporting us on it and really believe it's the way of the future. The profession is the way.
You make me want to start a career in supply chain management now a little bit.
So I'll be honest, Every time I meet somebody new, whether it's a summer student or somebody who's working in another department, and I chat with them for a few minutes, I'm like, have you ever considered a career in supply chain? It is verbatim what I say to people, because I'm looking at them, I'm like, you look like you could spend money.
But spend it well.
And spend it well under threshold with proper rigor. Yes. But no, I love it. I love when people are, when they can feel someone else's passion around it, and it makes them excited about thinking about that as their career. It gets me super excited.
On the topic of that, and this wasn't one of our pre-intro questions, but we're talking about it now. I'm curious, like, what would you say to somebody who's like on the fence about supply chain? Because I'll be honest with you, I remember back in my university days, this was in like business class, for example, that was something you can specialize in, supply chain. I had no idea what that was. No idea. I recognize words like finance, for example. That sounds right. That's a thing in business, right? But supply chain, I was like, this is already over my head. But you're not trying to sell me on it. More that, how would you inspire others who are kind of on the fence of supply chain in general, I guess, and if this is the career for them?
So you know what? You were fortunate. They at least said supply chain when you were in university. When I was in university, it was HR, finance, or marketing. I'm not very good at numbers. I can't sell anything to anybody. So HR it was. We didn't even have a like supply chain course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I would encourage anybody, if you are in university right now or considering going back to university, even in a part-time basis, which is fully doable, I would encourage you to at least take one class. Just take one class. If you're a social individual, even if you're not, both of which you can manage, you don't need to be an extrovert or an introvert to do it. Anybody can. And really just take that first course. Let me know ahead of time which course you're picking, because some may be more interesting than others. But really, if you have an opportunity to take an introduction to supply chain and just see how almost every single facet of the organization has some type of integral part into supply chain, you would be amazed. Out of all of the types of departments there is in any organization, there's only one chain which links every piece of the organization together. There is no finance chain. There is no IT chain. There is only supply chain.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Right? Wow, that's,
I love that.
And if
it
you,
sounds
if
like
you,
an ad for a school right now. I love this.
I do feel like sometimes I should go on behalf of the university to their like high school things and like promote it.
You know, if this doesn't work out for you, I think you have another career ahead of you right now.
But it's so true that a chain, you know, it interlocks with each other, and all the pieces in the business interlock with supply chain, whether it's from, if you're in a sector that has an end product, so you are selling the product, that's sell product has to go to a raw material in order for it to be made. That raw material needs to go into operations for it to be like into production, for it to be built. You need to inventory that product. You need to transport that product. You need to be able to handle returns and warranties on that product. And then you need to be able to satisfy your client after you have sent it to them. So they all interact. You're talking to every single department. I honestly don't see a piece of an organization that does not have an interaction with supply chain.
And I think this kind of goes back to your initial point that like there's so many steps to this that not anybody can just buy anything. And this is probably why there is a designation for supply chain in university.
That's right.
Now. Amazing. I'd like to talk to you about and pivot to procurement ethics and what that is, because we've actually talked about this a few times on other episodes, but it is interesting hearing how much this has become a very top of mind at the forefront of how you navigate it at different organizations now. So what is procurement ethics to you?
So for me and with the board, the procurement ethics is really about partnering with the right suppliers who manage and complete their operations in the same type of vision that we have for ours and the same value that's important to us. It can be a tough one to navigate though. Like my perception of ethics may be much more stringent than somebody else's. You know, there is no fine cut in line. So we try to make best practices the best we can. With WCB, we have a defined board that is set up. So a committee meeting that has a set of defined ethics, and it's from people across the organization. So we're getting different people's viewpoints on a singular item. And it's not just procurement ethics, of course, it's corporate ethics as well. But within procurement, we also have an ethical and sustainable purchasing practice and a supplier code of conduct. So these are documents that are key in doing business with WCB. We post them directly to the WCB website under bids and tenders, because it's important that it's out there and people can see that those things are important to us. We want to work with the best suppliers. We want to work with the people who have the same values as us and who want to do good across everything. That includes compliance to national and provincial laws. That includes social, environmental, and corporate social responsibility. But for me, at the end of the day, it's really on feeling. Like, my spidey senses get up when something doesn't feel good. Like, my spidey senses are like, no, I need to really take a double check at this, right? And, you know, I think that as an organization, we are really good at considering if it's something that doesn't meet our ethics. I'm confident that if something didn't, if my spidey senses went up, I could easily go to my supervisor or to our ethics committee and have that conversation, even if it's something that feels uncomfortable to have a conversation about, because as an organization, we believe so strongly in our ethics. And it's important that our vendors know that it's in our tender documents. It's out there. When you come to apply for us, this is important to us and we want it to be important to you. If it's not, we don't want to necessarily do business with you, right?
I have two questions. My first one being, how did you get bit by a procurement radioactive spider to begin with? Is because, you know, I would like to get spidey senses in some way. And if you can't answer that, if nobody can get bit by this radioactive spider, how do you streamline the process of finding which organizations have the same ethics as you do? Is it just a Google search? Do you go through like an extensive process? Is it an interview process? Is it just looking at documents?
So it's really about how we present the questions in our RFP. We want to see how you're answering them. And it's never that about that we want to trip you up by any means. We are very clear in what our questions are. And if we find that as we're reading through it, something doesn't seem like it jives, or if it seems too perfect to be true, we're going to do a little bit more investigating, because at the end of the day, we are spending somebody else's money. And it's important that we're doing that in the most efficient and economically viable way possible. Ethics is a part of that. We want to say that we did all of our due diligence. So for example, if I have a contract that comes across my desk and it happens to be for CK Farrell Inc., well, then I would hope that somebody would be like, isn't that Christina's address? And it's something that all of us have heightened at the tip of our fingers, not just our department, but also our legal department, our risk management department, our finance department. We're all constantly thinking about all of those potential risks to the organization. So we have those checks and balances in place. Now, can it always be better? Absolutely. And that's part of that strategic transformation, is trying to have those extra controls in place to not get to the place where we've been like, oh, this has happened now. We want to be at the place where we have mitigated that risk as much as possible. And one of those things is with an ethics piece. So we do a lot of checks and balances. We put it into our RFP. We can, if we need to, absolutely do a Google search. We do things like we'll pull a report from the government to make sure that the company is not insolvent or it hasn't been closed and opened and closed and opened a whole bunch of times, which can kind of be a red flag. And then we'll ask questions. We'll go back to the vendor and ask them, hey, we read it this way. How did you interpret the question that we asked? Because sometimes what you write on paper never quite gets the exact thing that you want out. So sometimes it involves having conversations, right? So it's important to us, and we want to make sure that it's at the forefront of what we're doing and everything.
That's really great. And I really liked how you dodged my first question about the radioactive spider, but I won't forget this. I have to say, for the people at home, Christina has been recording upside down from a web and this entire time. So I'm going to ask her afterwards how she got these superpowers. But before we finish, I have one more question for you, Christina, and it's not superhero related, don't worry. You don't have to reveal anything to me. But I'd like to end on a positive note. And we touched a little bit on the pandemic affecting a lot of people. And I think a lot of people have definitely took a hit from it. But on your perspective, you were able to overcome that. And that was part of a big success story for yourself. So I'd like to hear a little bit of like the most proudest achievement that your team has had over the pandemic.
Oh, wow. So for us, I couldn't actually be prouder of not just my procurement team, but we have other pockets of procurement in the organization. And I have to speak that all of them just, you know, rose to the top on anything that we needed during the pandemic. We went to work from home on, I think it was the 16th of March. I have some procurement people who've never stepped foot back in the building since. We also weren't a remote work environment. We didn't have laptops. We were still in towers. And our IT procurement group were able to masterfully locate laptops for every single person, get Citrix access for every person, convert them to Microsoft Teams within days. I seriously am still boggled where laptops and monitors came from for them. And like, I couldn't be prouder of the work that they did to get us where we are. I also think about things like PPE. As a whole, we never have an inventory in our organization. We have no need for inventory. We don't sell a product. But all of a sudden, we were scared we weren't going to find masks, or we weren't going to be able to get Lysol wipes, or God forbid, we couldn't find toilet paper. Like, it was not beyond us that people at the regular level couldn't find it. So how are we going to find it at the corporate level? And initially when we went home, you know, we're just going to be home for a couple of weeks. It's not going to take that long. I'm sure everybody was in the same predicament, but it was amazing to see the team tap into those pieces that they've gotten from their education and their designations that we don't get to use in inventory and operations management, and just watch them turn on a dime and source products that we'd never had to source before, make vendor connections, create relationships in which now vendors are calling and saying, hey, I just got a shipment. Do you need it before I post it? And it's like, yes, I need your sanitizers. And then to see them actually take the inventory, watch them have it delivered. Like, our shipping receiving department has never been accustomed to seeing pallets and pallets and pallets of wipes show up at our door, and turn that into an inventory with an inventory program and ins and outs, and being able to say, hey, this is our max and our min, and here's where we're buying it from, and here's the SKU. Like, just blew my mind. And I received an incredible call from one of our executives that was like, I have to comment on you and your team's really being able to bob and weave and navigate to where we are today and get us what we need. And the only thing I could think of was like, this is like our thesis. It's like what we have been training for our entire lives, but we finally get to use it. And it's an incredible feeling. And absolutely, at times it was stressful. It's still stressful when we're looking for stuff. But to know that we've now built up this incredibly diverse supplier base, where hopefully we never have to call on them again, but if we did, we could. And to also see how they've also transitioned their offerings to be able to support through a pandemic was wonderful. And to be part of that with them, I honestly could not be prouder of my team. Like, as an organization, I could not be prouder of how we were able to do that, all while still maintaining the level of customer service that our clients are accustomed to and the level of service our internal customers are accustomed to. So kudos to the whole crew.
What a fantastic story. It's really inspiring to hear whenever teams, when push comes to shove, when like adversity is in your face and you're like, you know what? No, we're going to band together, overcome this and do it better than ever. And then once you come out the other end, you know, morale on the team must be at an all-time high. You're like, oh, we can do anything at this point.
Absolutely. And the entire time, the one thing that I kept thinking about with my team was like, God, I wish we could all be together. Like, I wish we were there together, because we can do this from a distance and it's great. But imagine if we were in the rooms together, like how even better it would have been. And that was hard at times, because you'd want to be there with them and you'd want to be like, you're doing such an incredible job. And I don't know if this video call is really showing you how much I value you. But I've watched them grow incredibly. I've watched them become even more incredibly professional individuals in what they do. And it's actually allowed them to do tons of independent think on their own. So now they're, before where they'd be like, oh, I'm kind of thinking this. Now they come, they're like, so I have an idea. and I think we should do this, and here's how we're going to do it, and here's a write-up. And you're like, this is amazing. Like, it's really, really incredible to see it. And I know that the pandemic absolutely affected people in different ways, but that's one positive that I can take out of it for our team.
That's incredible. And that's awesome. Now you know if there is ever another pandemic, knock on wood, hopefully not, that you'd be ready for it.
That's right. We have hand sanitizer for days.
Before we close off the show, we always end with our guest sharing a piece of advice. Number one piece of advice for anyone starting their career in public procurement.
Oh, I think that's such a good thing. And I'm going to speak to this as something that I went through and found it to be really beneficial. So really, I believe anybody, if you can, take chances whenever possible. If you can afford to do so, work for a company on contract, cover a mat leave position, take a temporary placement. The most valuable lesson is to get an understanding of all facets of procurement, both public and private. This will make you a much more well-rounded specialist who's able to draw both from your experience and relate to internal stakeholders and external vendors. Without that experience, I don't feel that I would be where I am today. I think that taking those opportunities, taking those chances and those risks helped me be the rounded individual in the role that I'm in today.
That's such great advice. And, you know, Christina, I really think you have another career as like a motivational speaker or at a university, teach a class on supply chain management, you know, all of it.
You know.
Well, this has been such a lovely conversation. Christina, if people want to reach out to you and get some of your expertise, how would they be able to get in touch with you?
I would absolutely love to talk to anybody. Absolutely. You reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm there all the time, always trying to post really great little tidbits that we can share. I would encourage you, please hunt me down and find me. I would absolutely love the opportunity to chat with you.
Fantastic. Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Inside Public Procurement. This has been Christina Farrell from WCB. Again, Christina, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
What other Netflix specials are you going to watch next?
It's not a Netflix one, but I will be honest, I am very much waiting for Yellowstone to start again in November.
Ooh, I know this one. Okay,
well, I am waiting.
Thanks again, Christina.
Thanks so much for having me.
Procurement professionals like you are the lifeblood of public sector organizations, dedicated not only to supporting your agency, but the constituents you serve. That's why we've created the Inside Public Procurement podcast here at Bonfire, a unique place where you can share stories and discuss the topics that matter to public procurement pros. From digitization and the future of public procurement to ensuring a fair and transparent process, we're all about finding new strategies to help your agency succeed. Join us at gobonfire.com to learn more. You've been listening to Inside Public Procurement by Bonfire. If you like what you've heard, make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you have an idea for an episode or want to come on as a guest, email us at hello@gobonfire.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.